is Shlach, and being that we just had Shavuos this past week, really we're as far as our plan is, we finished with the topic of the covenant between the parts. We're going to move on to the next one, but we got caught with Shavuos in the middle, and then I was out of town the last 2 days, so to stall for a week, just to be totally honest. So we're going to go back to the parsha, and we're going to basically do the same structure. We'll just have a 1 week session. The very end of the parsha is the parsha, the third paragraph. I was about to say the end of the parsha is the third paragraph of Shema. It's really the other way around. The end of the parsha in Parsha Shlach, of course, the focus of the parsha has to do with the story of the spies. Moshe's sending out 12 leaders of the Jewish people to spy out the land, to report back, and of course, you know, the people believe their slanderous report on the land, and the decree of the 40 years of wandering in the desert that ensues from that. That's the bulk of the parsha, the whole story of what they say when they come back and why the people believe them. We're on page 816. At the very end of the parsha, which gets very little press time because everybody likes to talk about the episode of the spies, at the end of the parsha there are a series of laws which are seemingly unrelated to the beginning of the parsha. Beginning on page 812, if you just want to see it, really I'm beginning on 810. Beginning in chapter 15, we have the story of the libations, various things which take place, certain offerings which will be given in the Beis HaMikdash. You have the mitzvah of challah, of separating challah when a person, I refrain from saying it particularly for a woman, if a person bakes challah, so as they make dough of a certain amount, there's a mitzvah to be mafrish challah, to separate challah. There's specific laws regarding intentional or unintentional idolatry. Then we have the following, the story of the desecration of Shabbos at the end of the parsha, the mekoshesh eitzim, the one who was gathering wood on Shabbos and is taken out to be stoned. And at the end of that we have our particular parsha, the parsha of tzitzis, the mitzvah of wearing tzitzis, and this has been incorporated into our daily davening, both in Shachris and at Marav. When we say the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, there are three paragraphs to the Kriya Shema. This is the third paragraph of Shema. So I figured it was worthwhile, as we stole for a week, to go through this particular parsha. It's only 6 or 7 verses.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome, come on in. Within these 6 or 7 verses, it has that element of that which we are all familiar with because we say it so often, yet might not spend so much time actually understanding what it is that's contained therein. So I figured we will go through that today. We'll go. That's what we will do this fine morning. Now, with the understanding that the overwhelming majority of this particular room do not wear tzitzis, that's fine. Because the lessons that we will see as we go through Rashi inside go well beyond those who simply who wear them. So it'll be a worthwhile endeavor, trust me, whether you do or do not have the mitzvah of wearing tzitzis. Okay, let's go through. What I photocopied for you on two separate sizes, so we'll not get confused, are the actual Rashis. These are the translated Rashis, which we will go through as we go through this particular series of verses, and we will hopefully have an opportunity to learn a couple of other things as well. Does everybody have? There enough to go around? There should be. Yeah. I think I made 10 copies.
We can share.
I think that there should be 10 copies, so it should be all right. Okay, he has actually. Oh.
Well, good.
I'll pick one for myself.
Okay.
Okay, we ready?
What page are we on?
We are on page 816. So the text is going to be on your Chumash on page 816. The Rashis are on the sheets in front of you.
816.
Everybody ready? Here we go. So this is immediately following after the story of the desecration of Shabbos, as you mentioned a few moments ago. Pasuk Lamed Zayin, beginning with 37. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor. Hashem says to Moshe, saying, "Come in pasuk. Daber al bnei Yisrael v'yamarto aleihem." So we have the daber, speak to the children of Israel, v'yamarto aleihem, and say to them, v'asu lahem tzitzis, that they should make for themselves tzitzis. Al kanfei vigdehem ledorosam. And what should they? What now? What these tzitzis are is not yet really defined, but they should make for themselves tzitzis. Al kanfei vigdehem, on the corners of their garments. Kanaf is a corner, and beged, of course, is a garment. So al kanfei vigdehem, on the corners of their clothing, ledorosam, and this should be throughout their generations. Which is an interesting phrase, because there's a general rule which applies to all mitzvahs, that mitzvahs which are earth contingent, meaning they're based on the land of Israel, only applying the land of Israel, and outside of Israel do not apply. And mitzvahs which are contingent or incumbent upon the body, then it doesn't matter where you are. They're always applicable, whether you're in the land or not in the land. So says the Torah, says Hashem to Moshe, tell the Jewish people to make for themselves tzitzis, and it should be ledorosam, this should be for all generations. Rashi, yeah?
From the word dorosam is where we derive that it would apply chutzla'ar.
So my comment is, generally we would know that without the word ledorosam, any mitzvah which was given, which implies to the body, Shabbos, kosher, all of those things always apply whether you're in the land or not in the land for all times. So the fact that it says the Doro Sam seems to imply that this is going to be always. And it's a note that it's interesting to me that it's being stressed, even though we probably would have figured that out on our own based on the general principles that we have for all mitzvahs, that the mitzvah of tzitzis would have been the type of mitzvah which is done to the body, on the body, and therefore would always apply. It almost sounds to me a little bit like there would have been a reason to have assumed that somehow the mitzvah of tzitzis was desert-related. It was limited in time. There are certain mitzvahs which apply particularly in Sefer Bamidbar, which were only for the generation of the desert, and they were not given as eternal types of mitzvahs. And Hashem is stressing here, this is one of those mitzvahs that is eternal, even though it's been given in the desert. It's been given after the decree of wandering for 40 years, after the case of the Chilul Shabbos, the desecration of Shabbos. This is not just a response to that. This is going to be a mitzvah which is going to apply in all generations. But again, just getting through the basic verses at first here. So we have the mitzvah, speak to the people of Israel, the Bnei Yisrael, say to them that they need to make for themselves these tzitzis. They need to place them on the corners of their garments. L'doro summit should be for all generations. V'nosnu al tzitzis ha-kanof, and you shall place on the tzitzis of the corner a psil tcheles, a thread of tcheles. Tcheles is, of course, the color that has we are a little bit more familiar with in our generation than they were maybe 50, 60 years ago, as many people have begun to wear the tcheles strings. This color should be on the corner of the string. So you should make for yourselves tzitzis, and then v'nosnu al tzitzis hakanof, you shall make on the strings, on the corners, you shall make for yourself a pasil, a thread of tcheles. If you have a chance, I didn't have one to bring in, but because there's a dispute in the Gemara exactly how many of the threads out of the four, there are two major disputes here. First of all, how many threads go into each corner, because the Torah, as you know, does not exactly specify how many strings should be in each corner. There's a dispute in the Gemara between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether or not it's three strings per corner or whether or not it's four strings per corner. We, in an interesting a case of halacha where we generally follow the rulings of Beis Hillel, here we follow the ruling of Beis Shammai, and we put four strings in each corner according to Beis Shammai's ruling, and the four strings are doubled over as they, four separate strings are inserted, so when they fold over the corner, you actually end up with what looks like eight, but it's really only four strings that went in. How many of those four should be tcheles? The Torah just says, make for yourselves tzitzis, and on the al tzitzis hakanaf, on the tzitzis of each corner, there should be a thread of turquoise wool. So the simple reading might imply only one out of the four. And there's again a machlokas in the Rishonim, in the commentators, between Rashi and Tosus, whether or not it's one out of the four is tcheles, or whether or not it's two out of the four should be tcheles. Within each of those opinions, how is it wrapped? I should have brought a towel, and I could have done a show and tell a little bit easier. I apologize, I forgot. No, it's all right. I thought it would be a lot easier. Laura
TT?
Yeah.
Do you want me to bring one from upstairs?
I'm going to go get a tablet.
Yeah, that would actually be helpful.
There was one Shabbos when, you know, I sat so close to the very front, and there was one Shabbos where I happened to notice that every man who went up had tcheles on his talus. And then I commented to Rabbi Norman Schloss during Kiddush, And he said, sure, see, and he has it also.
Yeah, so in recent years, there's been a number of actual books that have been written in recent years trying to get a handle on what's going on. Starting with the Radziner Rebbe about 100, 150 years ago, the Torah is clear, we should be wearing tchelas. Somewhere along the way, several hundred, if not a thousand years ago, the tradition was lost as to what was the tchilah zone, the type of snail, thank you very much, that produces the tchilas dye. The Gemara says that it comes from the blood of a snail that produces the dye. And because of either persecutions or the exile, the inaccessibility of whatever it was, somehow along the way it got lost. And there have been numerous attempts to rediscover it, and the Radziner Rebbe thought that he had found it. Almost all opinions, except for the Radziner Hasidim today, disregard what he thought that he found to be the appropriate snail, and they don't use that tchelet. But there's another group. I forget the name of that group right now in Eretz Yisrael. They have a whole factory. I've been to visit it a couple of times. Who believe that they have found the appropriate snail.
Ari Greenspan and his group from
Italy. Yeah, I forget what it's called.
Italy,
yeah, they found them in Italy. They're hard trying
to. The whole research and everything, and they've got an exhibit at the little museum in Alon Shvut. About where they have a video. And
yeah, that's actually in their factory, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're producing it now, they actually have a whole video presentation, and they show you how they do it, and it's pretty fascinating in terms of how it works, in terms of how they extract the little sack of blood from the snail, and how they dye the tzitzis. But it's pretty interesting. And the issue at stake is, you know, is this the appropriate way of doing the mitzvah? It's clear in the Torah that that's how tzitzis should be. There's no question about that. And then we just have this sociological phenomena of a tradition which has been lost for 1,000 years. How and when do we bring it back? And what is the process of that? There are many factors involved. It's a fascinating discussion. Not for now. There's a catch 22. I don't want to get into the whole thing. Let's leave it at that. Yeah.
Yeah, why do we care?
Why do we care what?
If most people don't do it, why do we care?
Why
would we care about the turquoise at all?
Because
it's right in the Torah.
Right, and the Torah says that there should be a psil tcheles. There should be this thread of tcheles in your tzitzis, and it's clear that that's the appropriate way to fulfill the mitzvah. So the Gemara, by the way, is clear as well. The Gemara, we're going to talk a little bit more about this a little bit later. The Gemara says that if a person wears the white without the tcheles, they are for sure yotze the mitzvah of tzitzis. The tcheles does not, what we call ma'akev, it doesn't withhold the fulfillment of this. For example, if a person would... trying to think of a mitzvah which you would. If a person would have tefillin, they would only have three compartments instead of the four compartments. So that's not tefillin. But tzitzis without tcheles is considered tzitzis, and you fulfill the mitzvah. But the best way to do it is clear, is to have the tcheles. So the issue at hand is this the right one? If it's the right one, then what would be the only reason not to do it would be this concept of, well, we're not really sure. But if you're wearing the wrong color, it's also not a problem. So it's a major issue. I'm sorry.
Won't it matter only though when the temple is back?
No, mm-hmm. No. It's right now. The best way to fulfill the mitzvah is with the tchelis today.
We don't really know the color.
I'm saying if this is the right snail, then we do. This is the right thing.
But we don't know.
Right, that's the issue. In other words, they're claiming we know. We found it. It fits all the descriptions of the Gemara. It fits all the chemical descriptions that seem to be necessary. So we know this is it.
So one string of the four have to be.
So there's a dispute between Rashi and Tosfos whether or not. Let me just show you the four. So what happens is there's a hole placed in the corner. Mm-hmm. So when you put four strings through on the other side, it's going to come out. You're going to have what's going to look like eight. Of course, it's really only four, as you can see on each side. There are only four on each side of the baguette of the cloth. So there's a dispute between Rashi and Tosfos within the four. How many should be tchelas? Should it be one or should it be two? They argue about that. Within each opinion, you'll notice that we have the custom of several knots, which we're going to talk about again. While we have the talus out here. So there's a double knot right at the beginning, close to where the first double knot that's made. Then a series of seven wraps of double knot, nine wraps of double knot, 11, and then 13. Various customs as to how many wraps around the two sets of double knots. So there are five double knots, one in the very beginning. four series of wraps. Each one is surrounded by a double knot. So you have, between the four wraps, a total of five double knots, and the wraps in between. How the tchelah should be wound amongst this, in other words, if there's one string which is called the shamish, that's the actual string that wraps around. So is that the string that's supposed to be tchelas? If so, your tzitzis would look, if you could visualize what that would look like, all of your wraps would be entirely blue, and everything, all the knots would just have one of them running through them, that would be blue, but the wraps would be very distinctly blue. Or if you don't have the shamas as your tchelas, then you would simply have, the wraps would still be all completely white, and just within your knot, and at the bottom, you would have one thread that would come out blue, which have very different looks. And then there are many different opinions as to all these other customs, exactly how to tie them. Many different opinions where the tchelas fits in and how it's tied together. So there's a lot of different...
So who do you follow?
This is all part of why there are many books that are being published today, because now that we seem to have what we think is the correct tchelas, well, how is it done? Right, something looks similar to
that.
Okay, but yeah,
it
is something similar to that. Okay, let's move on though.
Well, first, is this supposed to be on each corner?
Yeah, on each corner.
On each.
Yeah. Okay. Says the, let's go further in Lamites 39. V'hayolachem letzitzis. Now these shall be for you as tzitzis. Uri'isem oso, and you will see them. Uzechartem es kol mitzvos Hashem va'asisem osam. They will be for you as tzitzis, the Torah says. You will see them. Uzechartem, and you will remember as kol mitzvos Hashem, all of the various mitzvos of Hashem va'asisem osam, and you will fulfill them. Let's just pause here on this first phrase. A lot going on in this phrase. The first part of the phrase is very odd. V'hayolachem letzitzis. The Torah told you already in the previous verse. V'asu lahem tzitzis. Make for yourselves tzitzis. Sages understand, part of the Torah Sheval Peh, exactly what they look like with the strings coming off of the corners. Make for yourselves tzitzis. And then the Torah says in 39, V'lamites, V'hayolachem letzitzis, and they shall be for you as tzitzis. That's a very odd phrase. Imagine if I said to you, make for yourself a mezuzah, and it shall be for you as a mezuzah. What does that phrase add? Of course, you just told me to make a... What do you mean it shall be for me? You just told me. Make tzitzis, it shall be for you as tzitzis. What does the Torah mean to express with that idea, that extra phrase of, after you make them, it shall be for you as tzitzis?
It has a function.
So correct, it has a function. Excellent. So the Or HaChaim, one of the classic commentaries in Chumash, says as follows. He bases himself on a piece of Gemara, which I may have quoted at one time over the years in this particular lesson, although it might be years ago if we did. The Gemara asks, which one is worse? Which one gets punished more severely? Someone who doesn't wear the white, who has the ability, or someone who doesn't wear the tchelas? So the Gemara says, interesting question. The Gemara says, I'll tell you a story. The Gemara says, there once was a king who asked of his servants to purchase from a certain type of seal, a seal that was used to identify slaves in those days. And he asked one servant to purchase for him a plaster seal, and one servant to purchase for him a gold seal. Both servants come back empty-handed. The one who was supposed to get the plaster seal unsuccessful, and the one who was supposed to get the gold seal comes back unsuccessful. Says the Gemara, who is the king going to punish more? The one who was supposed to get the plaster, and the one supposed to get the gold?
Plaster.
The plaster, says the Gemara. Was that successful in every marketplace? Like, everyone's got plaster seals. Those are like your cheap, modern-day plastic equivalent. That, what's the big deal? The one who couldn't find the gold, all right, as an expense, it's not so simple, it's hard. Yeah, the king asked you to get it. You should, no stone should be unturned before you find it. But it's not as bad as not going to your general marketplace and picking up that which is an everyday item. Says the Gemara, so similarly, someone who doesn't wear the white will be in a worse position after 120 years than someone who doesn't wear the tchelas, because the tchelas is harder to come by, it's a bigger deal, it's not so simple to get, but the white is easy. That's the Gemara. Tosus asks, why does the Gemara use, in its parable, the concept of a seal? Why? It could have said anything. Right, the sages, when they talk, the point was simply to get across the idea that it's more difficult to have access to the tchelas than it is to the white strings. So why specifically do they tell the story about a king purchasing a seal? So Tosfos points out, because the seal, as I mentioned, is that which identified a servant to its particular owner. They all had a specific type of seal, whether or not it was actually imprinted on them or they just wore it on, I don't know what it was. But the seal was the identifying mark a servant had on him to acknowledge who his master was. So Tosfos points out that's what the tzitzis are in effect doing for us. They're identifying us as servants of God. So the Rechaim says that's what the hint in the Torah says, v'hayolochem letzitzis, it should be for you as tzitzis, it should be for you as that seal. This is my, I belong to God. You start up with me, you're messing with the big guy upstairs. I just want you to know who I belong to. I'm not an independent contractor. I am a servant. And when you deal with a servant, you're really dealing with their master. V'hayolochem letzitzis, it should be for you as tzitzis, meaning it should function for you as that sign, as that seal, in the same way that the seal of the slave functions for his master. Okay, that's thought number one. So v'hayolochem uri isemo, so you shall see them. So from here the sages derive that the mitzvah of tzitzis is a daytime mitzvah, something that you have to be able to see, which is what's done during the day. Uzchartem es kol mitzvos Hashem. And you shall remember all of the mitzvahs of Hashem. And how does seeing the tzitzis help you remember all the mitzvahs of Hashem? So on the most simple explanation, it's like a red string, you could say. It doesn't have to be directly connected. Anything that I wear, if I know that this is to remind me, when I see it, it'll remind me of whatever it's supposed to remind me of. That would be the most basic understanding, which we'll see there's a much more depth to it than that. But that... And so it'll be your mind when you see your tzitzit. Like, why am I wearing these? Oh yeah, because the Torah says when you see these tzitzis, it will remind you of them. This, by the way, also this phrase of uri'isim also is the origin of the idea of wearing your tzitzis out, not having them tucked in. That they should be out because the Torah says when you wear them, uri'isim also, you'll see them and you'll remember all that you need to remember. So they serve as a reminder. So Rashi points out, but it's much more than just the red string. There's actually a hint within the Torah, within the tzitzis, to the mitzvahs. And Rashi points out that the gematria of the word tzitzis, the numerical equivalent of the word tzitzis is 600. Tzadi is yud, and tzadi is 90, and yud is 10. So tzitzis has tzadi yud is 200. The 90 and the 10, the 90 and the 10. The tuf at the end is 400, is 600. And the 13, Rashi says, comes from the 8 string and the 5 sets of knots. So 8 plus 5 is 13. So you see 613. The Ramban, others point out that the numbers are on various accounts don't exactly work out that way. But the Maral explains as the point is, however, whatever custom you want to have, that there's some type of a hint in which you can find within the tzitzis, the remez, the hint to the 613, that it will serve as a reminder that when you're wearing your tzitzis, this is my reminder of the mitzvahs of Hashem. The Ramban quotes an oft-quoted Gemara, that the Gemara says, why do we have tcheles? Why does the Torah ask us to put tcheles in our tzitzis? Because the tcheles is the same color as the heaven, and the heaven reminds us of the sea, and the sea to the heaven to the throne of Hashem. So through the process of seeing the tcheles, it will actually remind us, through the process of being reminded of the color of the sea, to the color of the heaven, so the throne of glory that Hashem sits upon, will be reminded of our obligations in all of the mitzvahs. And I always like to say, everyone, when I say over that Gemara, all of us have seen the color blue, green, whatever color exactly, many, many times in our life. And I would dare not to ask how many times when you've seen that color, do you go through that process of, that reminds you of the sea, which reminds you of the heavens, that reminds you of Hashem. Oh yeah, I'm thinking of Hashem when I see that color. But the Gemara says that. That's what the Gemara says. So I remember hearing once of these, I'd like to give credit to who I heard it from, but I cannot because I don't remember, that might be true when it comes to the color tcheles, but there are many other things in life that when we see them, our head thought process automatically takes us from one to another, and we end up on the things that we really want to be thinking about. Like when you're thinking of something, almost everything you see somehow takes you back to whatever it is that you were thinking of. And you know, if you're looking to buy a new car, so like almost everything you see will remind you of your decision about my, like, you know, this reminded me of this, reminded me of that. Whatever your head is in, that's where your thought process will take. So a person whose head is in looking for ways of reminding themselves that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam, that it's not just, for those of you who were at Rav Itamar Schwartz when he was here a week or two ago, from the Sefer Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. So one of the things that he really builds a lot of his books about is the idea of we know certain things, but we don't live with that knowledge. For example, if I ask you, does everybody here know what the capital of Georgia is? So imagine you will know this. It's not information that I need to tell you. You know it. But is that part of your daily life, that piece of information? It's not. When you need it, every once in a while it comes up where someone will either will ask you or it's relevant for some piece of information, and you have it, I know what the capital is. But it's not something I live with. It doesn't impact my life. It's not in the forefront of my mind. It's a piece of information that I know. We have millions and billions of pieces of information. But there are pieces of information that we don't just know, but we actually live with. There are things that are impacting us daily, moments as the moments go by, there are things which are on our minds. If Rahman al-Islam, somebody is having a major surgery, so that's a piece of information that you know. But it's not just a piece of information. It's something that you're living with. This is part of my existence, that this is taking place today, and I'm thinking about it always, and it impacts everything that I do during the day in terms of that piece of information that I'm aware of. So one of the pieces that he writes in his book, and he really, this is really the summary of his entire book, is changing our understanding of the existence of Hashem into something that we know, into something that we live with. And if you would ask any Orthodox Jew, do you believe in God? They'll say, of course I do. Do you know that He exists? Of course I do. Do you believe that He created this world and you? Of course I do. It's a piece of information. 2 + 2 = 4. I know that. But if I ask any Orthodox Jew in the middle of their day, are you living your life based on that knowledge? The answer is, what knowledge? What are you talking about? It's something that we live with. So he wrote an entire, all of his books are really just about that. That's all of his books. But how do you get there? How do you take a piece of information, a piece of knowledge that I know, and actually transform that knowledge into something that I am not just aware of, but something that I am living with? His example is a craftsman who's working with a saw as he's cutting a piece of wood. If you were to ask him, are you paying attention to what you're doing? He would say, yeah. Do you ever get distracted? Oh, no. I can't afford to be distracted because I'm dealing with this very heavy machinery and very dangerous machinery at that. And if I get distracted, I'm going to lose an arm. So when I'm working, I'm focused. And the entire point of his books is to teach us, how do we get focused on what the point of our existence is? Why are we alive? So even though everyone might be able to answer that question, they can answer that question to various degrees, starting from, I'm here to serve Hashem. Very nice. Are we aware of that? As we are cutting wood, are we paying attention to what we're doing? Are we getting distracted by various things? So the tzitzis is uzchartem also. It's a reminder. It's one of those things that says, you're in the middle of a job. You're in the middle of a job. When you see these things, you need to be reminded. And the sages saw somebody who's working on that will see in the blue-green color of the tcheles, their thought process will be taken back to, I'm always looking for things to remind me of what I need to be doing, because that's what I'm not in the world of distraction. I'm in the world of trying to get focused. And a person who's in the mode, the mindset of, I'm looking for things to remind me, to refocus me, not looking for things to distract me, will find in the things in life, things which will refocus him on what it is that he wants to be doing. Somebody had a comment, question? No, yeah.
I was going to say that the term Haredi has been distorted, but in essence, the word Haredi means exactly that,
right?
Being in awe of Hashem all the time.
Right.
If we use it as a uniform description.
Right now, it just describes the way you dress.
Uh-huh.
Haredim lefnei Hashem. There's a pasuk in Tanakh that describes. I think it means either passionate or
trembling.
To tremble before. Now it just means now it defines a
black hat.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to define a group that feels that way. But like all terminologies, it's taken on its own meaning. That's the idea of language that we spoke about all Shavuos night for those who are there. Right, language takes on its own meaning.
Yes.
Okay. Anyways, okay, so going back, so we have the idea, so it shall be for you as a sign, it shall be for you a remembrance that you are a servant to Hashem, u'ri'isemo, so you will see them, u'zchartem is called mitzvahs Hashem, and it will remind you of all of the mitzvahs of Hashem, v'asisemo, and then you'll be able to actually do them. Okay, v'lo sasuru acharei levavchem yacharei nechem. And then you will not explore after your heart and after your eyes after which you stray. Asher atem zonim achareihem. Says Rashi, v'lo sasuru. Let's skip all the way down to, on your sheets. This is the bottom of page 186 on your sheets. The wider sheets on the bottom of 186, the last Rashi, that's 39. Velo sasuru, you shall not spy after your heart. The word sasuru is like in meaning to mitur, as in spying out from the land. Now, where does the word spying out the land appear in the Torah? This week's parasha, correct, exactly, in the beginning of the parasha. Many of the commentators point out that the word lasur, to spy out, bookends the parsha, opens up with a spying out of the land of Israel, and it concludes with the prohibition or the reminding that of don't allow your hearts and your eyes to stray, to explore out around the things in the world around you. Now, Rashi's next comment is a insightful one. Why does the Torah? Who does the Torah talking to when it says not to explore after your eyes and after your heart?
It's talking to men.
They are talking to men and they're saying not to explore with their eyes and with their heart. Says Rashi. That was not the answer I was looking for, but that happens to be true. says Rashi, Halev v'ho einayim hei miraglim laguf. The heart and the eyes are like spies to the body. Misarsim loas ha'averos. They procure sins for it. Ha'ayin ro'ah, the eyes see, the heart desires. Right, here's the haguf oiseh ha'aver, and then the body commits the actual sin. So that the Torah says, do not stray after your heart and after your eyes, because your heart and your eyes are like your little spies that go out into the world. The eyes see things, desire them. The heart then wants what the eyes see, and the body will then go ahead and fulfill that. Rav Shlomo Volbez Zatzal has a very insightful comment on this Rashi. Who is the pasuk talking to? I don't mean men, women. I mean, what part of us is the pasuk talking to when it says, I want you to wear these tzitzis, and it will help you from straying after your eyes and after your heart, and all the things that you desire. Asheretem zonim achareihem, the things that you after which you stray.
Is it Yetzirahara? Is it the part of us that rationalizes what we want?
It's our mind.
It's talking to the individual.
You're on the right track, but think about what it's saying. It's saying, I'm giving this to you. I want you, who's the you, so that you don't stray after your heart and after your eyes, after the things that lead you astray. So he points out, there's a portion of us, people like to say, like, I really like that. I really like, the cheeseburgers. We'll take a classic non-kosher example. I really like that. Who's speaking? Who's the I when a person says that? I really like that.
Appetites.
Right? So we get confused and we sometimes identify ourselves, the essence of who we are,
the body versus,
right, with that I like it. I like this. I want to do this. But I can't because God says so.
You can't.
Right?
You can't. I want to, and like,
right,
who's on the outside, but you can't.
Correct. In other words, we identify ourselves with that desire. That's the real me. I really want to do this. And I have this problem, so like, you know, you can't do that. Like, there's someone else talking to me saying, don't do that. But like, the me really wants to. And Revolver points out that's really a total corruption of the reality of our existence. The Torah is speaking to the you, saying, don't stray after your heart and after your eyes and the things that lead you astray. Your heart and your eyes, the thing that are the spies for the body, the things that go out and they see things and they say, I want that. That's not the, I'm talking to you saying, don't let that lead you astray. Don't let those eyes, don't let that heart pull you after something that's not the real you. And that don't let that thing confuse you as to who is the me. And there is that I, in other words, Modeh ani lefanecha. We say to Hashem, I am thankful before you, Shehechazarta bi nishmasi, that you have placed within me back my neshama. Who's talking in Modeh ani? Who's the speaker? Right? It's the body. It's not the neshama. Because what's the statement? Right? I am thankful to you, Hashem, for returning in me my neshama. Not the neshama speaking. The neshama is the object of the talk. So there's this part of me that's separate from that neshama that still is not to be led astray by my heart and by my eyes and the things that desire. But that's not the me. That hijacks the me and tells me that I want these things. But the real me wants to be connected with Hashem and with His Torah and with His mitzvahs. Okay. Let's go on. There's still a ton of Rashi's that I want to see with you. We're running out of time. L'ma'an posuk mem. So we have, again, we have this commandment of the tzitzis. L'ma'an tiz kiruva sisemes kol mitzvosai. So that you may remember and perform all of my mitzvos. V'yisem kidoishim lelo keichem. And you shall be holy to your God. Ani Hashem elokeichem. I am Hashem, your God, Asher Hotzesi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that has taken you out of Mitzrayim, Lihios Lochem Le'elokim, to be for you a God, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am Hashem, your God. Now you cannot help but notice in that last pasuk, the repetition of,
emphasized it.
Right? Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am Hashem, your God, Asher Hotzesi Eschem, Lihios Lochem, to be your God, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am Hashem, your God. Now remember, the placement of this particular parsha is fairly soon after the giving of the Torah. They spy out the land. They would have otherwise been just a few days away from entering into Eretz Yisrael, and instead they have the disaster of this whole episode with the spies, and now they have 40 years ahead of them. But we are away at the very beginning. This hasn't happened yet. They're just into their beginning of their journey.
Well, isn't that the attribute of justice? The repetition of the name of Hashem in
yes.
His attribute of
yes.
So,
except it's Hashem and not Elohim.
Excellent. We have the combination of Ani Hashem. The name of Hashem is the attribute more of mercy or of creation, and Elokeichem is the attribute of justice. So Rashi points out, why do we have the two different usages, the names of Hashem, in this particular junction over here? So you'll see on the wide sheet page number verse 41 on the top of page 187. Top meaning the top of the Rashi section of 187. Ani Hashem, Rashi says, I am Hashem, faithful to pay reward. The name of Hashem, the Yud in the Hay and the Vav in the Hay, which is a attribute of mercy, is believe me when I say that if you do these things and you keep all my mitzvahs, I will justly reward you. I am Ne'eman, I am trustworthy for that. Elokeichem, your God, that the attribute of justice, I am also faithful to exact punishments. So in the same way as I promise reward, and trust me when I say that when I promise reward I will give it, and when I promise retribution for not keeping it, you can trust me in that as well. That's the double phrase of Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Why do we have the additional phrase, who took you out of Mitzrayim? Why is that added particularly here? Says Rashi, Asher Hotzesi Eschem, who has taken you out, on this condition did I redeem you, that you accept upon yourselves my decrees. That Hashem often will stress the idea, going back to Yetzias Mitzrayim, by saying, I didn't take you out for nothing, I took you out to have a relationship. And that relationship is me as the king and you as the Eved, me as the father and you as the son. And here are the rules, these are the decrees that I have placed upon you, and the condition upon my having taken you out was that you fulfill them. And so Rashi therefore puts that in here as well, on the phrase that we have here, Asher Hotzesi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Ani Hashem Elokechem, then the Torah again says, I am Hashem, your God. We already had that once in this pasuk. Why would we have the repetition of the phrase of, I am Hashem who can be trusted to give you reward. I am Hashem who can be trusted to exact punishment. I took you out of Mitzrayim, and the purpose, the reason why I took you out of Mitzrayim was specifically for this, that you should fulfill my decrees. Why does it then repeat again, Ani Hashem Elokechem, says Rashi, Shelo Yomru Yisrael, that the Jewish people should not say, Mipnei Ma Omer Hamakom, why did Hashem give us all of these commandments? Lo Shenasa V'nitoschar. Wasn't it just that we should be able to perform them and take reward? We should receive the reward for doing them. Torah says over and over and over again, I've given you these commandments, l'tov lochem. The purpose is to reward you, to give you good for eternity. Says Rashi, the Jewish people are smart people. We are smart, conniving, insightful people. And we would make the very simple arguments. God, this is such a wonderful offer. Really it is, really. I mean, you're promising us eternal reward. You're promising us all the goods that we can't even imagine. But you know what? There's a price tag for this. There's Shabbos, there's Kashrus, there's everything in between. There's a lot. No thanks. No thanks. I won't receive reward. You're giving me this offer, you're providing me with a deal. Do all these things, you'll have all this great reward. Thank you, but no thank you. Says Rashi, you might think to say that. Anu lo osim, we will not perform. V'lo notam schar, we won't take reward. To that, Hashem responds a second time, Ani Hashem Elokechem. I am Hashem, your God. Al Korchechem Ani Malkechem. I am your king, irrespective of your consent. Says Hashem, this is not like someone you walk by in the airport, and they say to you, sir, if you only sign up for this credit card, I'll give you 50,000 million billion sky miles for free. To which you say, thank you, but no thank you. I understand that there are strings attached. I understand that there are fees. You're offering me something. I got to do something in return. Thanks, but no thanks. Says the Jewish people to Hashem, really, this is sweet. It's a lovely offer. I'm really busy right now. I got a flight to catch. Shabbos, kosher, enough time. Thank you. I understand there are a lot of points at the end. Not interested right now. Says Hashem, no, 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 no. This is not just walking by a kiosk in the airport. I am your king whether you like it or not. And I conclude the paragraph, says Hashem, with a repetition of the phrase, Ani Hashem Elokechem. I took you out of Mitzrayim. I did this. You are now mine. I have acquired you through that. Whether you want to turn me down or you don't, whether or not you think this is fine, you like it, you don't, that is irrelevant. As Rashi concludes with another pasuk, V'chein hu omer im lo biyad chazakov v'chume, if I shall not rule over you with a strong hand, that is simply the way that it is, and therefore there is no choice in the matter. Whether you like it or not, I have created a mission of Pirkei Avos, which we studied there min chamav not long ago. Al korchechem out the nights are against your will you were created, against your will you were born, against your will you lived, and against your will you will die. That's not an option. You can say no thanks, you'll take it without it. But I actually am running the show, Hashem says, and I've actually decided that I did want to create you, and now that you're created, you can't say no thanks, and now here are my laws, here are my decrees that you have to observe. There will be enormous reward. I'm telling you this is for your own good. I'm telling you that I'm not doing this to torture you. I'm telling you that I'm not doing this because I like to see you stress, and I like to see you spend a lot of money Pesach time, and I like to see you with difficulty on fasting on Yom Kippur. I'm telling you that I'm doing this for your own good. The benefits that you will have at the end will be beyond your wildest imaginations. And therefore you don't have a choice. Because if you had a choice, you would look at me the way that I look at the person trying to give me a credit card in the airport. Really, that's very sweet. I don't have time. I'm too busy. We're all too busy to do this. Shem says, no, 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 this is life. You're too busy. Being too busy means you have something else that's important. There is nothing else that's important, irrespective of whether you like it or not. I am your king. Ani Hashem Elokechem. Yeah.
If it worked out a little differently, let's say, whatever, Avram didn't have, he didn't ask the Bama Ida, or the brothers didn't sell Yosef, and the Jews didn't go through the Mitzrayim route. Let's say it wasn't not necessary. Wouldn't Hashem have the same claim on us without Mitzrayim as with Mitzrayim, or do you think that Hashem has a better claim on us with Mitzrayim?
That's a great question. There is certainly a fundamentally different claim because of Mitzrayim, of I have redeemed you from the bondage of servitude, and therefore you have that. I don't know what it would have looked like otherwise. It's a good question. We found, as we learned the last time we got together, by the Aseres HaDibros, the element of the personal connection of not saying you're mine because I created you, which would have also worked, but you're mine because you, the people Moshe is speaking to, were slaves a year ago, and I took you out. So there's a different element in that. We are the descendants of those people have that personal connection. What it would have looked like without that, an interesting question.
It seems like Har Sinai also must give a claim against the Jewish or a connection too, maybe almost more, but it seems like basically Mitzrayim is our key connection, at least one of the sources that all the Torah and the mitzvahs, Zecher, Litzias, Mitzrayim,
yeah.
Everything. So it really seems to hinge on that quite a bit.
The reality is the way that things did happen, Mitzias Mitzrayim was our insight into Hashem as the creator, into the idea of being able to control nature. So we reference it always as that point of... this was really the introduction of the Jewish people to Hashem in that, and the accepting or acquiring you as mine because of what I did there. You know, that's an interesting question. Like, what would that what if? I'm imagining there would have been, you know, something else that would have taken a step, but I don't know.
And if I can take one more, as you heard from me on that one, when it says Uri Sem Oso, you should see it, which is a singular. Do you have a feeling? Lights on just the blue string.
Yeah, it almost sounds that way, yeah.
That's what it seems like.
It does sound that way, it's a good point. Like the resemblance, and to see them will be there. That certainly fits with where the sages come from when they say that when you see the Tcheles, then that will remind you of the sea and the heaven. That it, specifically, the Tcheles more than just the white that will cause that recollection. Continuing in Rashi, Dover Acher, alternatively, I am, for those who have taken your finger off the place, heaven forbid, we're about maybe 12 lines up from the bottom of the Rashi. Again, Rashi's commenting on why do we mention here Yitzias Mitzrayim and Ani Hashem Elokecha, why am Hashem your God here? Why is the exodus from Egypt mentioned here? To say, I am the one who discerned in Egypt during the last 10 plagues, Bein Tipa Shel Bechor, between the drop which caused the conception of a firstborn and that which was not of a firstborn. So again, this is coming off of Steve's comment. We refer to Yitzias Mitzrayim over and over again because of what it teaches us about Hashem. When the firstborns died, and only Hashem could have known that this one was the firstborn, and that was I knew all of that. So Anihu Asid LaHavchan, I am the same one in the future who will discern the exact payments from one who puts the regular tcheles dye from a tree on his garment and says that it is tcheles. The Gemara talks about the kala ilon, which is a certain extract from a tree, which would be pushed as real tcheles. But it was not. So says Hashem, you should just know there are going to be a lot of fakes out there, different colors, and I will be the one who will discern if you try to pull that off and wear that instead of this, that I will know the difference. This also has to do with the issue that we started the day with in terms of is it the right color, is it not the right color, because there's an entire discussion in the Gemara about this, what's called Kala Ilan, this extraction from a certain tree, which was a similar looking but not correct color. And the impact of that particular discussion in the Gemara about what would be if we have the wrong snail, if it's not really correct. Continues Rashi from Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. Rashi quotes often from Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan. Why is this parsha next to or following right after the one who gathered wood? No, there was a progression. The Torah talked about idolatry and the punishment for an idolater. Then it spoke about the one who cuts down wood on Shabbos. And then it spoke about tzitzis. So Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan says, what's the progression from idolatry to Shabbos to tzitzis? So the passage about the gatherer of wood was just juxtaposed with the passage of idolatry to say that one who desecrates the Shabbos, onto the top of your single page, one who desecrates the Shabbos, as did the gatherer of wood, is like one who worships idols. Sha'afi, for Shabbos too, it weighs as much as all of the commandments. Rashi points out various times where the Torah gives us certain weights to certain mitzvahs, that some are more heavy than others. Gemara says, as Rashi quotes here, that Shabbos is keneged, is corresponding to all of the mitzvahs. The testimony to God's existence and the creation of the world in 6 days and resting on the seventh is such that it is therefore the same as idolatry. So it's juxtaposed. One who worships an idol is analogous to one who violates the Shabbos. One who keeps the Shabbos is declaring there's no such thing as idolatry, there is only a one and only, and therefore those go together because they are similar. And skipping a couple lines, the Af Parsha Tzitzis, and then the passage about Tzitzis too is juxtaposed with these commandments, because it too weighs as much as all of the other commandments, as it says, and you shall perform all my commandments. Through the wearing of the Tzitzis, a person will be reminded of all the mitzvahs and fulfill all the mitzvahs. So the progression is idolatry to Shabbos to Tzitzis, which will have the ability of allowing one to fulfill all the commandments through being reminded of them.
Shabbat.
Yeah.
So a question comes to my mind. How can two or more different individual commandments each be equal to all of the others?
Okay, good.
Combined.
Right. In other words, what the sages are saying here is in terms of the value of these particular mitzvahs, certain mitzvahs have that value of... You're asking a technical question, which is a good one. In other words, if Shabbos is connected everything, well, then if I wear tzitzis, you can't tell me again that I'm connected everything, because
it's just worded in a strange way. Because
yeah, and it's the sage's way of saying, in other words, the Mishnah says, "Havi zoher b'mitzvah kala kivuchamura." Be careful with that which is considered a light mitzvah, which as much as that which is considered a heavy mitzvah. So that the sages are clear, there is such a concept of lighter and heavier mitzvahs. On the heavenly scale, they are actually not weighted the same. The Mishnah tells us, but don't play that game, because you don't know which one is light and which one is heavy. So even though you think that these are lighter, you need to treat them all the same. And here the sage is giving a certain instance into certain ones. No, Shabbos is heavier than the rest. The real question that you're asking is in the question of tzitzis, which is in there the Rashi quotes, it's only because tzitzis will allow you to fulfill everything else. It says you'll remember and fulfill, and that's why they put such a stress on it. But tzitzis is much more of an interesting talk, why that should be. Shabbos has a much more obvious element of it's testimony to the existence of Hashem. And sure, of course, that would be connected to everything. Because if I don't keep Shabbos, then I'm saying, you know, it's hard to buy into the whole program when Shabbos represents what it represents. So there the sages will say Shabbos is connected to everything. It has the same equivalency, the same stature, the same heaviness as all the mitzvahs. Tzitzis is really much more of a novel idea to say such a statement about the mitzvah tzitzis. That is for sure. Okay, one last question, which we're not going to have time to do, but I'll just whet your appetite. The very last Rashi here. Very last Rashi on the page. Rashi sticks in a single line. Shmona chutin shibah, the eight strings, unrelated to the previous lines in the Rashi, three lines from the bottom of the page. The eight strings in the tzitzis. Why do we have eight strings, Rashi says? And really, it's four folded over into eight. Why should there be those eight? Corresponding to the 8 days that Israel waited from the time they left Egypt until they sang the song at the sea. So there's a hint in the tzitzis to the 8 days between when they left Mitzrayim until when they sang Shiras Hayam Oz Yashir. Major problem with this, Rashi?
I didn't know there were 8 days.
How many were there?
Seven.
How do we know that there were 7 days from the time they left Egypt until they sang the song at the sea?
I don't know.
Anyone remember what we lay on the seventh day of Pesach, the first of the last days of Yom Tov?
We're too busy.
Yeah, too busy.
Shiras
Hayam, the seventh day of Yantiv, the seventh day of Pesach, is Oz Yashir, is the day that the Jews crossed the sea and sang the Shiras Hayam, which Rashi quotes elsewhere in Chumash, that we have a Yantiv, the second, what we call the second days of Pesach, which begins on this. And if in Eretz Yisrael, if we didn't have Chutz La'aretz, what we would have, if we did it right, we would have the first day would be Yantiv, 5 days of Chol HaMoed, and then the last day of Yantiv, the seventh day of Pesach, is Yantiv. And the seventh day of Yantiv corresponds to when the Jews sang the Shiras Hayam as they crossed the sea. They sang the song of Oz Yashir, as Rashi points out. We have everything all mixed up. We have 2 days in the beginning and then 2 days at the end. So our second days fall out on days 7 and days 8 of Pesach. So the question that I will leave you with is, this is a funny thing. Rashi says, why are there 8 strings to the tzitzis? Because there were 8 days corresponding from the time they left Egypt until they sang the song at the sea. So we have these 8 strings to correspond to that, to remind us of that. 7 days, whereas we're 8 strings. So I'll tell you the answer and you can think about it. I spoke about this the last day of Pesach, maybe 1 or 2 years ago. The Maral explains in Rashi, it's true there were 7 days from the time they left Mitzrayim, but there were 8 days from the time that they offered the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach. Because the Korban Pesach is brought not on Yontif, but brought the day before Yontif. So from the time that they brought the Korban Pesach till the time that they sang was 8 days, and then the tzitzis would correspond not to the time that they left till they sang, but from the time that they brought the carbon Pesach until they sang. And you can think about what's the significance of that, and why would we have tzitzis to reflect that. But that's a whole 40-minute shmooze, and we're out of time.
Thank you.
Just to whet your appetite. All right, have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.